Ladies and gents, will you give an enormous round of applause, please? Get involved tonight. For Elmer, for Mike, and to Emily Scarrett. Enjoy your evening, and we're back here on Monday as well. Go well, guys. Have fun.
Thank you, Alex. It's so good to be here. I think the last time I saw like a crowd of people at an event was in Japan. So it's been 2 years and a day for me. So if I'm a little starstruck by all the people here, just give me a moment because this is really amazing. I have been psyching myself up for this for only 24 months. We are so happy to be at the Prince in Fulham. When they tagged me on Instagram, I did worry for a moment that we would actually be outside under the stars because my African constitution is not quite managing with winter just yet, but we'll get there eventually. It's really cozy and gorgeous, and you really have the best seat in the house, courtesy of Red Bull.
The good thing is, not being in South Africa, you have lights and stuff.
We have electricity here, which is also really nice, yes. I also, for the first time in my life, now live in a house that has heating. We don't have that in Africa. I couldn't manage. It was embarrassing, but I didn't really know how to switch it on. But now it's working, and I feel very fancy for having it. Back to the rugby. Thank you so much to the good, the bad, and the rugby for doing what you guys do. I have to say, I mentioned this when we first went on air with episode one, which I think was the week of International Women's Day in March. A lot of people for International Women's Day tend to, a lot of brands and people who work in marketing go, ooh, it's International Women's Day. We need to think of something that we can do to make women feel seen. And then they do one thing and then they move on and the rest of the year there's just nothing. And so for the good, the bad and the rugby to actually do something that has had lasting impact and is consistently growing and going places is incredibly refreshing. And I love the fact that they don't just talk about women's rugby, but they really created a platform for women to talk about rugby, both women who would be terrible at playing it, like this one, and then Emily, who's the best. So thank you, Mike, and you guys really do amazing work.
No, look, it's a simple thing. I think women's rugby is growing. I think it needs a platform to grow. It needs a lot of it comes down to sponsorship, so thank you to Red Bull for being able to put all these things on. And you know, it's difficult for the girls. That, you know, they're finally, I think the Allianz Premier 15s is going to be the leading light in professional sport for women's rugby, and hopefully we'll get a multiple of cultures coming in and players, and hopefully that will then generate stuff around the world. But it needs people to get involved. It needs sponsors to get involved. I think the game will only get better. Me and Emily have discussed this in the fact that I think they're back in where I was back in 97 when it just turned pro, and it's an exciting future for all of them, and it can only get better. So if you run any companies, CEOs, anyone in here, then please put your money into women's rugby and let's make it grow.
And I love the fact that I feel like rugby is everywhere right now. I got off the train in Richmond last night and there was just so much branding about the Autumn Nations everywhere to be seen. I walked in here and that whole thing being the tunnel and the little change room down below, the way that the Prince and Red Bull have taken the opportunity over the next 21 days to create rugby-related content and events for 16 out of 21 days is just amazing. It might get colder outside, but it's certainly warm and fuzzy in here for someone like myself who has been watching the Autumn Nations tests from afar for many years. So this is a really exciting period to be here. And you, I hope, will be back when the good, the good, the bad and the rugby will have Jack Knoll on here.
Next week or the 8th or something. Yeah. I don't even know what day it is anymore, but yes, we will be back with Jack Knoll, Red Bull ambassador and legend, the most tattoos on a man and the most chilled man in the world. I just follow him, and I've got like three kids now, and he's got his child, and everything looks quite cool. He goes camping, and he looks like he's just everything smiles, and then I look at mine, and all I seem to do is shout at them. So I don't know whether it's the full West Country down Devon way where he just is very chillaxed, or he only manages to capture those magic moments. My
chillaxed.
Magic moment.
You tell you're a dad who says chillax.
Chillax.
Yes, I am old. Thank you for that. Fuck you, Emily. I used to like you. Sorry, there's the first swear word of the night. Don't worry, it'll get There'll be more.
We were trying to do a family show here.
Yeah, no. I always liked Emily, and then I realised that Aitchison's far better as a centre. Ooh. Scored on the weekend, and maybe she's the way forward.
Gosh.
Sarah's such a great captain as well.
Okay.
I'm really going to bury you now. You've turned up for one show, and then you rinse me.
Okay, come back for Jack Knoll and then get some parenting tips if you feel like you or anyone in your life need it, because Mike's going to be asking him.
I need parenting tips if there's any out there.
He is a Red Bull athlete, and I've heard amazing things about how they kitted out the athletes with literally at-home gyms. It's not just, you know, like a few cans of energy drinks. There's like very literal ways in which they work towards getting all of the people they're involved with to really push the boundaries, even in lockdown.
Yeah, well, you say that. I've just said he's a great dad, but the reason he got that gym built was that he then spent 6 hours a day in there, so he had to avoid being actually a parent for 6 hours. Red Bull really supported him on that bit. But I think what Red Bull have done and what they do, if you watch any of the VT, if there is VT going around, I so want them to teach me how to fly with one of those suits on, where you just jump out of a plane and you don't really know where you're going until you pull the chute. That'd be so much fun. Crazier the better for me. Are you of that or not?
Yeah, I'm keen. We were just speaking in there. We should do a verse, boys v girls verse.
GSR, what are you going to be in on this? Or I reckon you and Alex might just do the old, we're here.
It would be really good if I could retain my teeth in this process. I'm keen. The problem is that I know myself really well, and so I have loads of confidence, but not the actual coordination to pull a lot of these things off, which is why I'm a really good spectator, but I tend to destroy myself in participating in
things. I think if you jump out of a plane, coordination doesn't really matter.
Well, someone just needs to pull the cord.
Yeah, you've only got to do one thing. I can't do it.
I can't find it, please. So I'd have to be babysat in the process. They can tie me to, you know, the chest of someone who actually knows what they're doing, and then we can just do a tandem.
See where you go.
Yeah.
Rip man, strong.
Oh,
I see. Long hair.
I'm
nice smile.
I actually, if you followed me on Instagram, I do have a type, and it's not long hair.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So what you're saying, Emma?
Now, speaking of hair,
how you doing?
We literally have a fence between us. It's not social distancing. So we do have a guest who is known for her amazing scrunchies. I was wondering whether she was going to launch some sort of hat brand at some point, because I have heard about the Mo hat and all of the knitted garments that is synonymous with her. She's also a really close friend of Emily's. And when we announced that we're going to have a special guest at this event, someone texted Emily immediately and said, is it?
Is it Mo?
It is indeed Natasha Hunt. Hey. Let's see how she does the gracious entry into the little box. I'm a little surprised by the number of people here, but you have been speaking to people on BBC Two over the last few days. I mean, you are just flying at this stage. It's almost incredible that you can be such a talented rugby player and just slip into commentary the way that you have. It's just seamless.
You're being too kind. No, I think I've had a lot of stick. I just love rugby. Like, I love rugby union, so it just comes across.
You
can pick, start.
Everyone.
You've literally been chatting about being a dad for the last 10 minutes. Yeah, no, I just love it. So it's been a pleasure to be involved on it, and amazing to see.
And I love when the numbers came out yesterday that there was, 700,000 viewers and another almost 100,000 on streaming requests. That's rivaling, you know, some serious football matches in terms of the scales of the interest. It shows you that if you put it on BBC Two, people are going to watch women's rugby.
Oh, 100%. We've been saying it for years. Like, we just need to be able to be seen. And as soon as it's out there and people can access it readily, like, the growth is just going to be huge. So, yeah.
We had to battle flog it at the Six Nations, didn't we? And we've, if anybody knows about that, we've beaten them now. So, yeah, long may it continue. But, yeah, it's awesome. Terrestrial TV, no excuses. If you want to watch it, it's there for you.
Irony,
so it's awesome
that you didn't play in the game that beat Flog It, but there you go.
Oh. It's also really good timing when you do have 700,000 people tuning in on terrestrial TV to then have the kind of performance that they put out. I mean, it is really important to then also reward people with loads of tries, which was a spectacle to behold.
I mean, I watched it and absolutely loved it. I think, you know, sometimes there is a stigma that comes with women rugby, and people need to knock that barrier down now. I think in the world that we live in, you can appreciate good skill sets, and there was so much of that on the weekend. Mm. And, New Zealand will say we're a little bit rusty, we haven't played for 2 years and this and that, and we'll obviously see this weekend what that happens. But you play what's in front of you, and the girls did such an outstanding job stretching them, making them look like they hadn't played for 2 years. And that's a skill in itself, because sometimes you can get dragged into games and play the way that someone else wants you to play, and to stick to what was working for you and carry on doing it, and some of the individual performances, and they deserve that win, and they should be sort of applauded for it.
Mm. When Sarah Orchard turned to you towards the end of the game and said, "So, Natasha Hunt, tell us who your player of the match is," I went, "Ooh, isn't that awkward?" Because, I mean...
I disagreed with her, by the way.
Go on.
Oh.
Who was you?
No, I thought the fullback. I thought she is... I thought Dow had a great game as well, but I've already talked about little things that will make her absolutely unplayable. But I thought the fullback is just kill done. Was unbelievable. Her feet, her ability, her carrying in two hands, it was amazing. There were obviously good quality bottomen. I thought you never appreciate a prop, but bottomen was outstanding. Obviously, the second row scored two. Abby, what's the surname? Come on, Mikey. Ward.
There you go.
There were so many quality performances, and you couldn't name anyone on the New Zealand team who you would say should have got into that team. And that was always the Clive Woodward way. You always just compare one team with the other. And on that day...
But is the broadcasting thing really easy, or do you have moments where you go, "Don't make me do that, please"?
I don't like the player of the match. Like, I really don't enjoy picking that. Obviously, like, play a lot with the girls. I'm quite close to a lot of the girls as well. So anyone I pick, I cop so much stick for. Like, I'll be inundated with messages like, "Why did you pick her? No, it should have been this person," which I don't mind, because obviously I always want to check. But for me, the reason England won was the distribution. Zoe Harrison was just brilliant, like the way that she moved the ball. Like, I understand what you're saying, but for me, the reason that that team won and they look so good is literally what you just alluded to. So that's why.
Mo texted me about 20 minutes into the game saying, POM ? Zoe Harrison. I was like, mate, 20 minutes is gone. Like, calm yourself down a little bit. But I agree with her, to be fair. Not just sticking up for my mate, but I do think she was very good. And so much has been said about Katie Daniel McLean retiring and someone filling that shirt, blah, blah, blah. It's getting boring now, and she's my friend as well. But I thought Zoe was really good. She actually stepped up, took it on, looked really confident. I was really happy that she was able to put that performance out.
I'm still stuck on the fact that you had time in between commentary to also text.
Oh, no, I do.
She's a multitasker.
Wow.
Yeah, for sure. When we were watching the Allianz Premier Final last year, and she was still texting away, doing social media, Instagram. She's like, "Would you come and coach Hartbury?" I'm like, I don't think so. Okay, well, I've just texted the coach. You're in. And I'm like, no, I don't, what? Sorry? And she's like, "No, you're in. Well, you've got..." And next thing you know, I'm at Hartbury doing coaching, and she doesn't even turn up.
How is that
injured,
going?
Apparently.
What is the review? If Tyndall could get an Uber rating for his consultancy at Hartbury, how many stars would he get for his services so far?
Well, like, we've just had... So Hartbury, I'll lay it out there, is like this unbelievable facility, like amazing pitches. Like, I'm not actually trying to sell you the dream. I'm genuinely just painting the picture. We've just had this, like, multi-million pound new 3G laid, and nobody is allowed on the 3G without boots on. Like, you literally can't walk on it. Like, people come running out and are like, "Get off the 3G. Tins rocks up, literally trainers swarming around this 3G, and everyone's too scared to say anything to him, so they just carry on. I actually played that weekend, and for 3 weeks I haven't managed to make a session on Tuesday after the weekend. I think it's my age, so I wasn't actually involved in the session, which is terrible.
But it was good that she stayed to watch it. No,
I had a bike session to do. I had to go.
Captain.
Yeah.
Hello. Tell. And after literally pounding me about it, going, "Yeah, you need to come now," because then obviously James Forrester coaches, and as soon as she said to Django that you've got to go coaching, he's the male Mo. He's like on you all the time. And literally, fourth. We got the fourth in the diary. I'm like, no, I can't do that. Okay, we got the eighth in the diary. And I'm like, and then suddenly we ended up with a date that Sinbad could do as well. And I actually quite enjoyed it. I actually think there's more in it, but we'll see where it goes.
No, the
actually,
girls
now,
loved
why
it.
Have I said that?
Don't
because,
say that.
Yeah. Why have I said that?
He's back. No, the girls absolutely loved it. And one of the girls that moved on recently, 13, Millie Wood, like local girl, loves Gloucester, has grown up watching you, was absolutely gutted that she missed it. So now it did.
She's never left.
Exactly.
Are you going back?
No, I actually would. I think I would quite like to go back. There's a lot. I think there's a lot of things that can be done there, and I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think sometimes with the guy stuff, it can get a bit sterile, and you come across quite some interesting egos. Where when you go and coach the girls, they just want to get on with it and learn and do that, and it's quite nice. I think it's as I said before, it's going back to the early days where people just want to learn, and that's quite powerful.
So are you coming back?
Yes, I will. I will if you're training.
Deal.
is there anything that you've learned from the experience other than really keeping him accountable?
No, it was just awesome to have both of them in and like running around seeing what we do, and obviously like you've alluded to, like the women's game is massively growing, like it's becoming huge. So to actually have you guys seeing that and promoting that as well is just massive for us.
Well, like we sat together and we talked over that final, and we when Skaz decided not to do her own show and she went and we got paid by BT. Obviously, we pulled up the reins, and it was just great sitting next to. Well, we were just literally talking through the whole game about what Mo was seeing, what I was seeing, and where I would do things differently. She's like, "Oh yeah," and you're just sharing ideas and how you see things, and that's basically what rugby is, what coaching is you're going to have a quality of player that you can play with, and it's then just manipulating the space to suit. And that's what England did on the weekend, was manipulate space to their strengths. And you know, when you put the likes of Dow and Kildon in space, you get that.
I really loved watching the match from home because the atmosphere seemed amazing out at Sandy Park. There were so many people and they were so seriously... You know, sometimes you watch a rugby match, like at the Sevens sometimes, and you can see no one in the stands have an idea what the score is. I mean, they would be hard-pressed knowing who's actually playing at the moment. But there on Saturday, the focus and the intensity from the stands just seemed electric.
Yeah, it was mega. Like, obviously, we were doing some TV stuff and kind of had my back to it a lot of the time, and then just turn around and it looked full. I think 9,000 something, 10, nearly 10,000. Yeah, amazing. And down in Exeter, they love it, don't they? They're so passionate about it. And I think for me, that's why we need to play standalone games, and we need to play in, you know, smaller stadiums, but of a capacity that we can fill, because the atmosphere is amazing. It feels like, well, everybody is there to watch us rather than just waiting for the traffic to die down after a men's game before they want to go home, which, yeah. You know, you don't want that. You want people genuinely there. People have travelled miles to come and watch us. And the beauty of this autumn kind of series is that they're plonked all over the country a little bit. So actually, wherever you are, you can go and find one, hopefully not too far from home. But yeah, I'm all about the smaller stadiums, bigger crowds.
So the thing that's interesting about this week, outside the fact that we're all in one place on the same side of the equator for the first time ever, is that it's bookended by two tests. And it's almost like cricket in that there was a first test and now everyone has a week to decide kind of how they're going to approach the next outing, same teams, different venue, but it is a challenge that now is going to require kind of, you know, moving, shuffling things around a bit. Obviously, from a New Zealand perspective, you're expecting them to bring a lot more to this second outing. But let's talk about the recovery. You've got a few days and probably some very sore bodies. On the one side, you have players buoyed by a massive result. And on the other side, obviously, a massive challenge and trying to get up and make sure that you...
I was going to say, let's talk about the party first. Was there a party?
Was there a party?
If you beat New Zealand, there's normally a party.
There had been some muted celebrations, I think.
What does that even mean?
Well, I don't know. It wasn't there.
I saw one picture of Hannah Botterman with a Halloween face on, nice and green. Halloween. So I think they had a bit of face paint and Halloween. A Zoom, wasn't it, for the first caps?
Yeah. So they, because Maud and Holly both got their first caps. So obviously COVID life, etc. They set up a Zoom for friends and family to watch the presentation of their first caps, which was really special and cute.
Forfeits?
So
initiations?
The loose initiation for a first cap is singing a song
on
the
bus.
What
do you mean, loose?
Well, as in...
I'm finding some things we need to nail down here.
Well, okay, so it is the initiation, but I guess when you think of initiations, you think of terrible university things, don't you? And it's not like that.
Sing a song? Or?
So sing a song. So you sing a song on the journey home, basically, which doesn't sound that bad, but it's terrifying.
Can we discuss what was yours?
So I went through about five, and
you get booed.
I got capped by myself, got booed, next, had it, and I ended up with YMCA.
Wait a minute. How old were you when you made your debut?
It's black and white. Right?
18.
That is cruel.
I'm an old soul.
And Mo, what was your song, Mo?
Do you know what? I actually...
established tonight that you're a rapper.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the raps were flying out of the head. I couldn't remember any. I actually went through a few as well, because generally, if you know a few people on the bus, you get booed a lot. And I ended up... I think it was Meredith Brooks. Like, you know the one that's like... I'm a bitch, I'm a lover. Yeah. Terrible. So, don't judge me.
Elvis found
more.
A song.
I'm a sinner, I'm a saint.
I do not feel the same. I'm a.
And nothing in between. I don't even know it. Shut up. Favourite song. Favourite song.
All right, I don't feel judged, actually. Crowd pleaser, clearly.
You've been asking everyone if they had to sing for their supper what they'd be singing backstage, so let's hear it.
My song, if I had to sing for, like, you need to know every single word, it's Boom Shake Shake the Room. I've done it quite a few times. But you want to sing it? Only if you can do it with me. Yo, back up now and give a brother room. The muse is playing, the man about to go boom. Mercy, mercy, mercy me. My life is a cage, but on stage I'm free. Hyped up, psyched up, ready for walling. Standing in a crowd of girls like an olive. See the one I want to say, come here, cutie. I flip her around, then I work that booty. Work your body, work your body. Slow down, girl, you're going to hurt somebody. Hold up, yo, let's just one thing clear. There's only one reason why I came here. I really want to tell you to tell you what's up, yo? You really want to tell you what's up, yo? I really want to tell you what's up, yo? I came here tonight to hear the crowd go boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Do you really? I'm not doing all three verses.
Mike Tyndall, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm available for all bar mitzvahs, weddings.
He's back on
the occasional
Monday.
Funeral.
Right here at the Prince in Fulham. He sometimes,
well,
you know.
It's ironic, the Prince, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You know, I knew. It's almost like it was staged.
It's almost like we literally planned it like that. Okay, so let's talk about nutrition. Red Bull, of course, being the sponsor, this is an impossible segue, so I'm not even going to try get across from that into
energy.
The next topic.
You could have gone high energy. Yes. That was quite high energy.
High energy. We're all here about an energy drink. So you are recovering from a massive game on a Sunday. You've had a little Halloween. Everyone's been singing on the bus. You wake up on Monday, and I'm sure, no doubt, it hurts. Tell us about what Monday is like immediately after that, knowing that there's another one coming this weekend.
You've got a table full of backs, which probably aren't the best people to answer this question, because I think the forwards definitely feel it worse. So maybe we can hand the mic to Bri. But I think it's definitely easier to recover once you've won. That's the first thing I'd say. So coming off the back of a win, the girls will be buoyed by that for sure. But it's kind of like the boring stuff. You'll get in the ice bath, you'll do the pool recovery, you eat a lot, you have to fuel loads. Oh, here she goes.
No, do you know what? Skaz doesn't actually know about this bit, because if you play like a full 80, which generally Emily Scarrett, ladies and gentlemen, does, you get a very different recovery to the girls that come off a bench. So if you come off a bench, you have to do
sprints
after match fitness after the game, which is just awful. You've already warmed up about 5 times, and then the day after you have weights and a bike/conditioning session, whereas all the other girls just swan off into the pool. So yeah, it's two completely different things. But you don't know that, do you, Mitch?
Well, the question was recovery, so I was answering how you recover.
You can only do what you've done.
Yeah, exactly. You only know what you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is a good day, really. Well, it's not if you're a sub, but...
No.
You get to go in the pool.
Yeah.
Loads
of fueling, I think, is the key thing. So you essentially just eat loads. A bit foie gras-y on a Monday after a game. And it's quite good. So you just restock everything, because you lose a hell of a lot in a rugby game that you don't really appreciate.
Yeah.
It's so professional now in the fact that they know how many metres you've covered. They
yards.
Know what yards. That shows how old I fucking am, doesn't it? Anyone have a metric conversion? You know the metres that you've covered. You know the forces now. I know that some of the girls are wearing the gum shields with the force monitors in. So it's so down to the last detail on what you need to do. And if it's been a tough game, they back off. And ultimately, the next week, all you need to bring, you've just had a massive victory. So you know how to play rugby. You know that you don't need to change too much. It's making sure the energy that is there next week. So hopefully Simon is just going, right, we can just back off. Let's recharge the tanks. As Emily says, just eat, hydrate, and we go again. Because you know that you've got the platforms in place. The game's not going to change. The people aren't going to change. Let's just make sure we've got all the energy tanks to the top. They have to change some stuff. So let them worry about that. We've just got to make sure we refuel and we go again.
As the one person who has never played any professional sport, I can tell you I was in the bubble with the Springboks for the Lions tour, and I was astounded how much variety in fresh products and berries and salads and quinoa. And I thought it was just going to be meat, 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 and some more meat. But there was actually, the diet was incredibly varied. Is that something that happens across the board?
Their budget's a bit bigger than ours, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 100%. No, yeah, look, 100%. It's not just meat. It's about all your nutrients and minerals and vitamins and all that sort of stuff as well.
Macros, darling,
and micros. Yeah, but obviously a lot of... The biggest problem eating when you're on camp is that you have no control over it. Mm. So you're in a hotel... Yes, you have input from a nutritionist sometimes, but essentially you get what you're given a little bit, and there's a bit of choice in that, but you don't. It's not like the luxury of going to the shop, and especially now, COVID times, the girls can't leave. They can't go to the shop if they didn't enjoy dinner or whatever. I mean, I think Deliveroo is still pretty high on people's most recently used apps, but yeah, so that's the hardest thing. So it's kind of down to the management to make sure that actually everything is set up well at the hotel. They understand what you need and the requirements and stuff.
Yeah. And then the gum shield, because I know they made a whole thing about this new gum shield. There was a whole interview about it. And how keen are people to just change gum shields? Or does anyone have, like, their lucky gum shield that they don't want to give up? I know people sometimes have weird superstitions and attachments.
I'll go first. I never wore a gum shield, so...
that explains a lot. It's okay, continue.
So if everyone remembers my old nose before I bought the new one. So I had my nose was quite messed up since I was 4 years old, so I couldn't breathe through it, so I had to breathe through my mouth. And most gum shields used to be quite big. And not to say that I looked really bad before I sort of paid for everything to be fixed, but I had teeth that sort of overlapped. And I sort of wanted my teeth to get knocked out so I could get a new set. So I never used to wear a gum shield, so hoping that my teeth would get knocked out. By the way, don't try this at home, because it's not really what you should be doing nowadays. This is just how we thought back in the day. And Francois Steyn, obviously a big egg from South Africa, massive head, loads of flowing hair at the time. Can't remember what year it was. But basically, he was playing centre before he drifted back to fullback. When you know when you get back to fullback, you've got a great kick, but you're a little bit too slow. And anyway, he dropped his head into my face, and he smashed into my teeth. And I was like, "Yep, that's it. They've gone." I always used to carry a gum shield in my bag for insurance reasons, so I could still claim my new teeth. But as I sort of got up from the floor, thinking they've definitely gone, they've got to have gone. That was full top of the head, straight in skull. And as I went to grab where I thought my teeth should have been, all I felt was hair.
Oh.
And I literally scalped him down this. So I'd scalped him down his head. My teeth had won over this massive South African's head, and he had about a 3 or 4 inch scar down his head, and I had all his teeth, his hair in my teeth. And he went up and went, "Mate, what is going on?" I said, "I don't know. I thought you were the man for the job and you failed." In the middle of a rugby game, he goes, "Sorry, what?" And then we have to sort of, I was like, "Oh, I'll see you after." Oh, pulling it out of my teeth. So there you go. I never wore a gum shield. Look at them now, eh?
If you were tempted,
Colgate, I'm available.
If you were tempted to take up rugby and this has cured you of it, please just tell us whether this is at all reflective of your experience.
No. Okay. I think all the girls wear gum shields, don't they? Won't mention, but yeah, it's definitely different. I don't actually know the answer to this, but I immediately thought of Sarah Hunter. So Sarah Hunter, our captain, is the most
superstitious, ritual-based person,
verging on
ever.
OCD person with stuff like that. So she packs her bag in a certain way the night before, which a lot of people do. Peanut butter and jam sandwich, approximately two hours and 34 minutes before kickoff.
Wow.
Like, it's really rigid. If we're going somewhere where there's no peanut butter or jam, she takes her own. She'll get her mum to post it in. She gets the manager to post it in if it's not there.
And you guys never steal it, right?
No,
never
we don't.
Wind her up, never.
You got to judge the room with stuff like that, and that's one room not to mess with. Yeah,
that's where you're too kind.
Yeah, no, it's probably kind. The difference between men's and women's rugby, isn't it? But yeah, she's incredibly superstitious. She's worn the same boot, not the same boot, but the same style of boot for ever.
I thought
ever.
You were literally going to pull out a trigger comment.
No.
She's worn the same boot, but she looks after it. She's had 3 new soles, 2 new tops. How is it the same boot, Trigger?
No. Okay, she can afford boots and she just knows what she likes and she likes what she knows. So it works for her. That's a really interesting innovation that's being trialed in women's rugby, which I love because it gives us data that relates specifically to women's rugby players and their needs. A lot of the research that is done in sports science sometimes doesn't actually relate to women and their bodies and how that functions sometimes very differently. And another interesting, great big leap ahead today, I actually want us to give them a round of applause in their absence. And this is the Wales Rugby Union.
Yes.
Granting contracts to 25 women's players today. Huge.
Awesome. Yeah, so good. So I'm fortunate enough to play with about 8 girls, maybe more, at Gloucester Hartbury of the Welsh girls. And I just know how much it means. Like, so many of them, we train, like, we travel so far to play games on the weekend, and then they're straight back to work. They come to us after work. So sometimes they don't even get there. They're running into meetings, still in their work clothes, trying to change before gym. So just knowing what it means to them and also for the game, like, it's huge for the women's game. Like, hopefully this will be the start of something bigger. I know Scotland have got some part-time contracts in place already, but the more nations that start to do this, the more and more nations have to, and it's just so important for the game.
We hope that this now continues to put pressure on other unions to do it. Obviously, England have done it. We've been incredibly fortunate. Hopefully, our results are speaking for themselves, certainly in the last 24 months or so. Wales are now doing it. Hopefully, that is reflected in how they play and some of their results. Obviously, Rome wasn't built in a day. It's going to take a bit of time. But hopefully, that continues to put pressure on other nations, especially within the Six Nations. Obviously, you know, a lot of the results, some of them are big scorelines. We want to continue to close those gaps, continue to raise the standards, and yeah, one of the best ways to do that is to professionalise the girls in the game and give them the best opportunity to be the best they can be.
I think for me as well, you just see the difference that it makes. So someone like Jasmine Joyce, she was in with GB7s, contracted for 6 months. Like, she's come out of that programme and she is just absolutely flying in Premier 15s, also in this, like, I'm sure in the Autumn Internationals, exactly the same. When she went out with GB7s, like, she was player of the tournament, back-to-back tournaments. It's no wonder that she's training with elite athletes full-time, and then she goes and does that because she's had the opportunity to. So fingers crossed this will actually springboard many of those girls to be able to do the same.
And it's also going to obviously attract girls who are kind of leaving school, because you start making really crucial kind of life-determining decisions around 16, 17. And if you know that there is this pathway, there's this opportunity to actually earn, you know, an income out of playing rugby, and you've always dreamt of representing your country. If you're Welsh, this is huge.
So good. I think Mo and I will probably hopefully both testify. It's definitely the best job I've ever had. And I'm sure it'll probably be the best job I ever do have. Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't end too soon. But yeah, it just gives...
Guts Cast Rugby will be the best, hopefully.
But it gives young people that opportunity to now be like, oh, what do I want to be when I grow up? I want to be a professional rugby player. And that's something that we were never able to say, we were never able to think about. Obviously, we were lucky that it happened. But yeah, it's amazing. I'm really, really chuffed for them. And hopefully it goes on for good things.
I want to come back to Mo, the sevens conversation in the Olympics, because we have to talk about that. But before we get there, this does kind of raise the conversation of a women's Lions format, structure, the feasibility kind of study going on. Emily's giving a great big sigh there, because this is a recurring topic of conversation. How do you fit a women's Lions format into the structure of women's rugby and the way things are right now? Because the landscape looks very different. South Africa, for example, is still probably a decade behind where at least women's rugby in England is right now.
It's got to change. You know, going back, you know, what they described there was what I was at school. So in 1996, I was doing my A-levels. I was sort of saying to my mum, I want to play rugby. She's like, there's no money in rugby. So, well, actually, 95, and then 96 comes around, suddenly professional contracts have been handed out. I'm going into my A-levels, I finish, and I get offered a contract at Bath. So it's got to gain momentum. The thing is, people shouldn't ever deny the girls to be able to do that. And I think what they're proving on the field and what they're showing in their skill sets will only get better. It will get better and better. And then, as you said, the next generation will go, I can win a World Cup. These girls are smashing it. They're doing far better than what the men's were doing at one time. We talked about it on the podcast. Is at one point they were sort of leading the men. We were sort of embarrassed, really. And you look at what, you know, women's football was in America. The girls won they won the Olympics, won the World Cup, and the men are flying around on private jets and they can't even qualify for the Olympic Games, or they can't qualify for the World Cups. So there's got to be balance around the quality that you have, because that leads around the world. I think the Allianz Premier 15s will suddenly become the guiding light, so you'll get girls coming from all around nations who'll play, then we'll go back to their countries, hopefully inspire the next generation you go on. But the biggest thing about it is giving the opportunity, and that involves companies getting involved and actually women CEOs, women going, actually, I want to change a game. Because, yeah, you know, there's loads of money that comes into men's sport and everything. Someone sit there and go, actually, I want to change something that I can be tangible about. And that will make a massive difference to a lot of, well, a sport in itself, whether it be rugby, whether it be whatever. And then the next generation builds on top of it. You've seen it through Olympic sports like cycling, where success leads to more success, rowing leads to more success, leads to more success. And it all comes on, unfortunately, it all comes down to sponsorship dollars. And they deserve it. I mean, they're World Cup winners, they've done everything, and people should get behind them and just buy into it.
To answer your question, I think the Lions thing is... I don't think...
Oh, sorry, I went way with that. I went rogue.
We gave Uncle Mike some time there.
Sorry.
What would you like, Emily?
I don't think anybody disagrees with the fact that it's obviously a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
It will happen. I don't think anybody disagrees with the fact that the women have to do it differently. They have to find their own way because the men's model won't work. And I think that's exactly right. I don't think anybody has a disagreement about that. I think the bits about how are the really difficult bit. How do you formulate that Lions team? Because at the moment, obviously, lots of people would assume it would be largely England dominated that side or that squad. Obviously, with Wales contracts, that would be hopefully, again, change that landscape a little bit. But it's the how. I don't think there's so many things that everybody agrees on. You know, the side can't go to South Africa at the moment, as you've just said. Going to New Zealand would be great. Could we go to North America? Definitely. Could France get involved? Maybe. Making it women specific, yes, big tick. However, the how is the biggest difficulty. However, I'd love it to happen. I'd love it to happen soon because I'm knocking on.
Yes, please.
Also, I understand that point in terms of like it being largely English dominated, but that's, for me, that's because players haven't had the opportunity to train. Like, if there's a window of like a month or something that you're out on tour, like, I think there's so many people in the Welsh international squad, in the Scottish international squad, that could actually push for those places. But it's just actually seeing it, like being part of that GB7 squad. There were some quality girls. Lisa Thompson, one of the most talented players I've ever played with, skill set wise, across the board. Like, no offence, Gaz, I know she's in your position, but genuinely, like, one of the most skillful ballers I've played with. But she doesn't get the kudos because of the nation that she's potentially playing in at the moment. And actually, you don't, like, I think as soon as the people, these players are given that opportunity, Jazz Joyce, for example, you'll see them thrive. So, yes, I know what you're saying. England have been fortunate enough to have those opportunities. But as soon as these opportunities are allowed for others, I think that we'll see that massive rise. And 100%, it doesn't have to follow the men. Why can't we just create our own?
And it definitely shouldn't follow the men. It's a different sport at the moment. Yeah. And I've talked to Emily numerous times about other things that I think should change within the game. And you build it to what will be the best attraction for the fans that are out there, and that's what you've got to do.
And that's what's great about women's rugby, and a lot of the solutions that are proactively being instituted is that it doesn't have as much of a heritage. So it's boxing clever in very structural ways. So the creation of the Allianz Cup, for example, while, you know, the internationals are ongoing, bringing a wider pool of players into participating in matches in that time and ensuring that there's still competition ongoing in these periods. That's a really innovative thing that, you know, that's really unique, I think, in women's rugby, and that's great to see. You talk so beautifully about your experience with the GB team. How do you feel about that now? Because when you Google the GB7s, it's just you being crushed, you know.
Crouched, absolutely crushed.
Like, yeah. And you can just, I mean, the body language is painful to even look at. Is it still really tender, or how are you feeling now?
Do you know what? Like, after we got back, it was one of those anywhere but fourth. So obviously going out to Rio, coming fourth, like Skaz can testify to as well, it was absolutely crushing. I remember walking off the pitch. I don't think we've ever spoken about this. I remember walking off the pitch, and obviously Skaz was our captain out in Rio, and they asked her for interview, and I've never seen Skaz so upset. And I was just like, oh, I can do it if you want, because she was just so crushed. And you know, when you're like, you don't want to see your mate have to go on telly and like actually deal with that. But she was like, no, it's absolutely fine. But that moment was just awful. Like, it was, we were so dominant the whole time. Played Canada in the pool, absolutely crushed them, and then didn't turn up for the final. So that was in Rio, and then we went back out. We were unbelievable. Playing against USA in that quarterfinal was probably the best game of sevens I've ever been part of. The heart from the girls, like the defensive effort, everything, everyone was talking about it, how amazing we played. And then we just didn't back it up. The second day we came back, and there was myself, Abby Brown and Jazz Joyce that were there 5 years previously, and we just said, girls, we're not doing it again. Like, don't let this happen again. Like, we have to turn up. This job isn't done. Because we were sat, weren't we, on the bus after quarterfinals in Rio, dancing, going wild, because we got ourselves into a medal opportunity, and we were absolutely loving our lives. And then that was my biggest takeaway from there, not to do that again. We hadn't, the job wasn't done. We had a quarterfinal, we had a semi-final to fight for, and we needed to show up. And unfortunately, like, we just, it just wasn't our day. And yeah, it's crushing. But at the end of the day, like, we talked about it being a bigger journey. We talked about getting GB7s on the map. I know that I kind of swanned into that journey really late, but it was still exactly the same for me. The same heart and desire to put sevens out there for everyone and to leave that legacy. And I definitely feel like we did that. So that job was done. But, and also, like, a medal doesn't define you. I think that's the biggest thing as well in sport. Everyone, there's so much heartbreak at the Olympics because everyone's going for gold. And then some people might get bronze. So Fiji probably came away from there with a bronze medal, absolutely loving their lives, and everyone else was absolutely crushed because they hadn't achieved their goals. But that doesn't define it. And that journey for me at the time that it was in my rugby career was probably one of the most special. So yeah, I take that. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. That's cute. I think the biggest thing, obviously watching, obviously a lot of close friends and whatnot, it was heartbreaking. And the biggest thing was the journey that they'd been on. So they lost their contracts. The Sevens girls lost their contracts. So they were essentially unemployed because of COVID. Had a really tough year. How long did you come together? 2 months? 2 months pre-Olympics, most one in late, but everyone else 2 months pre-Olympics, something like that anyway. Yeah. Really, really late. And then they went on to do that, which was amazing. And I think the Sevens game is, it doesn't get the recognition, the kind of highlights that it deserves, the headlines that it deserves, but it's an unbelievable game. And I genuinely think Tokyo gave it a platform. It showed people how great that game is. Obviously, we all know about Dubai Sevens and the party you can have over there and all that sort of stuff, and that Sevens. Yeah, I don't understand why it isn't given the kudos that it deserves, because it's an unbelievable game.
Yeah. I think for me as well, like backing up the conversations we've just had about the Lions, like there's no reason why we have to keep separating England, Scotland, Wales in women's sevens. It's a completely different ball game to the guys. Like on the World Series, the guys are all competing in their own right, and then they come together for Olympics and GB, whereas the women don't have that. It's only England that have the right. We actually are a stronger team when we go as GB, and we were in the Olympics. It showed it. So the fact that we're still trying to separate that and go England, Scotland, Wales on a World Series when there's a platform and an opportunity for these girls to play, I just don't understand it. And I feel like something, we don't have to keep that exactly the same. That model can change for the women's game, if that's the best thing.
Does it not help all the nations by having nations out there? And even if you do play individually, ultimately you want a global game, so you need as many nations as possible playing in those sevens. So does it not help by having a separate team for Scotland, Wales,
but they'll
Ireland?
Still play European separately, so they'll still have that opportunity to compete at a good level internationally in the European sevens. But World Series at the minute, Scotland and Wales aren't close to it, so why not combine that and have those girls seeing that opportunity, playing against New Zealand, playing against Australia?
The hockey model do it, don't they? Yeah. So they train as GB all the time, compete as GB, and then they split for the Commonwealths or the Europeans or domestic stuff or whatever, rather than we seem to stay as individual nations and then come together for the Olympics, as if the Olympics is some pony tournament that we're just rolling out for. Like, it should totally be the other way around.
The other way around, so that is the structure and the consistency that then allows you to really be competitive at the Olympics and not just have 2 months going into it.
It's probably a funding model, though, is it? It's a funding model from, I'm getting into it now. It's going to be a lottery funded, but for every other time you're not lottery funded, so you're funded by your unions. So anyway, there's a question for everyone.
Head.
If you write down on a piece of paper how Seven should be funded, we'll take answers and we'll do a poll.
What was Japan like for you? Because obviously I have spoken to one or two other people about that, saying that it was really tough for them not being able to have their family members in the stands, not having support and fans, people to play in front of, and just, you know, a more muted experience. I guess it's unique. That's one thing you can say for it.
100%. It was super unique. And do you know what? The hype around it, I think, was huge, because everything was back home. Like, there wasn't anyone there. So you kind of had so much interest back home and loads of stuff going out on socials and stuff like that. So people really got behind the tournament, which was amazing. But in terms of actually running out into the empty stadium, yes, you're still at Olympics, but we could have been absolutely anywhere other than the branding that was around. And it was quite sad, to be honest, because when we got there, like, GB do it so well. So Team GB have holding camps and different stuff like that. Like, they do the branding incredibly well, everything. They make you feel so, so special. But we literally were in a hotel that was split from the public. So we walked up a different stairway to anyone else. And it was lined with Japanese people the whole time. Every time we went, every time we came back, they were clapping us in, clapping us out. Honestly, the most incredible humans. We were out to training, straight back to the hotel. Then when we got into the village, exactly the same. We went to either competition or to training venue, straight back to the village. And we didn't see anything at all. So it was really cool. They did as best as they could, but it was a very strange time for sure.
What freebies did you get?
A phone? They do it so well. Like, when you walk into the village on your bed, which was made out of cardboard, really weird. But they have like loads of different bits. So there's like a Samsung phone, you've got a UU bottle, just loads and loads. I can't even remember.
Did you take your duvet home?
Yes, I took my duvet home. Get your own duvet with Tokyo.
What are you doing with the duvet? Do you have it on your spare bedroom bed?
No, no, it's like in a little bag, little carry bag, which is pretty cool. And then whenever someone comes to stay, I'm like, oh yeah, I just got this, you can use it. Shameless.
You can literally Airbnb your spare bedroom, complete with Olympic duvet. That's a unique selling point right there. You should use your microphone.
It gets you an extra 50 a night, the Olympic duvet.
Stay with an Olympian and sleep under my... I mean, this just gets really creepy quickly. Olympic duvet.
Let me know, anyone, yeah?
Focus, focus, focus. So you come back from Japan, Mo, and the next thing, you're back into it with the 15s. I mean, you said it at the start, but you really do love rugby.
Love rugby union, yeah. Absolutely love it. Straight back in. So I think I had a 3-week break because I wasn't contracted anywhere. I was allowed to just go straight back in. So 3 weeks off. And to be honest, it probably wasn't long enough. When I got back, people were still asking me about the Olympics. And it's so weird. Like, everyone wants to talk to you about it because they're so proud. But deep down, you don't want to talk about it at all because you're actually so disappointed with the result or how you fared or... like what happened. So it's just such a strange, I can't even quantify it, but it is a very, very strange time. I was not ready to be back, but kind of being thrown back in that quickly almost made it better. And then as soon as I got back out there with the girls, it was just business and as usual. And I think Skazza alluded to the fact, like, we call ourselves the circus because nights are just that loose. So yeah, it was good fun. It was good fun to be back.
Tins will know, good Gloucester nights out, a different gravy.
I can't really repeat any stories that I've had from Gloucester night. So, just
what do you want to know?
What do you want to know?
You literally cannot do that.
You want to know places, nights, officials,
dates, the whole thing.
What? No, from Gloucester. I don't know. Where do you normally go out in Gloucester?
We just go Keys and then go into town like the Strip. So.
See, this is where the girls are a little bit different. We just head into the NAM.
They go to Cheltenham.
Into the NAM, back in Cheltenham. Everyone used to live in Cheltenham. It's changed, though, now. Quite a lot of the boys live in... I remember it used to be at a place called Casey's in Gloucester when I was first... Yeah,
that was like 30 years ago,
And I'm old. Stop it. but you get trapped in this place. It's like a time warp. But you wake up and it's 6 a.m. But... do you ever go into the NAM?
Nah, very rarely. Gloucester girls. NAM's too posh for us.
I was wondering about that. Is it posh?
Yeah, it's a bit posher, yeah.
I don't know what you're saying. I can't understand what you're saying right now. It varies. I've been out numerous nights out. We used to do end of season tours, and we'd go do a tour around the Gloucester pub, so we'd end up in Long Elevens, we'd end up in Dursley, we'd end up in... and you have some interesting nights out there. Yeah, morph suits, though, is always safe. No one can see your face, so it's always quite good, yeah. Until someone rips the suit off your back, and then then it gets a bit interesting. But
Morph suits. If you see people in morph suits in...
Well, if they're ginormous people, generally they're rugby
suspicious.
Players.
So
yeah. They're trying to hide away.
Be suspicious. Do you know that I once busted Brian Abana at Loftus Versfeld at a Springbok test in full, like he was wearing a wig and a beard wig. Like, it just kind of went all the way around. And the only reason I realized it was him is because his son was with him and I recognized Timothy. And I went, hey. And he went, how did you recognize me? Shh, shh. Because we were in a huge crowd of people. So, next time you see someone wearing suspicious looking
outfits.
Hair with massively broad shoulders, take a second look. It might be a test rugby player just going incognito as a fan. Returning to 15s is a topic that we've discussed before with Emily, but having come from 7 straight back into it with Gloucester, were you like the fittest person there?
Do you know what? I remember coming back and doing my first run back, and I actually did it with Zoe Allcroft, who, by the way, is an absolute animal. Like, she's such a machine. And it was one of the first times that I beat her, but I like actually rinsed her a little bit, and she was so sad. So, yeah, I didn't realise quite the fitness that I'd come back with, but it did make a huge difference. I've plateaued already. Don't worry, you'll be fine to know. But
back to the usual,
yeah. But no, it does have a different level, especially the death zone and stuff we used to do with the sevens was just
the death
crazy.
Zone?
It's literally what it's called.
What is the death zone?
So it's basically ball in play. So any mistake, another ball would get thrown in, or they'd kick that ball, or something. The distance would change, so you're sprinting back to get a ball behind you, and then you're playing. So it's like sevens fitness times 1,000. It's awful.
I'd love to be in the death
times
zone. 1,000, yeah.
Just in case.
I was going to say, this sounds like the kind of job I would never apply for.
I only lived in the comfort zone. It was just, you know, that's where I tried to base myself. Be an experienced senior player and live in the comfort zone. Yeah, that's where you dream
15
of.
15 people on a pitch to keep it nice and slow.
Yeah, and be old and smoke a Cuban and go, yeah, no, send the young guys in.
Speaking of fitness, Emily, not fit at the moment, obviously still wearing a boot. What does remaining in shape look like when you're not super mobile?
It's hard, actually, yeah. I stepped on the scales the other day, actually, and I was all right. And I'm questioning whether the metalwork that's now in my ankle, how much that weighs. The surgeon wouldn't give me an answer.
Not a lot, I'll tell you, not a lot.
But no, look, when you're rehabbing, you actually trained potentially sometimes harder than when you're actually fit, because you've got so many sessions to do. You've obviously got all your rehab, you've got all the finite stuff that you're doing around the individual bits around your foot and the muscles and the intricacies and all that sort of stuff. So got lots on, working pretty hard, but obviously not back up and running anytime soon. So I'm going to enjoy my Christmas, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Ooh.
For the first time in a long time.
Is that on the farm?
God, yeah, of course.
You live on
the farm. I didn't see any turkeys on the farm.
No turkeys on the farm, but Mum does a good Christmas dinner. She's a very, very good cook.
Mums
it's
always do,
stereotypically farmy. It's very good, yeah.
Can we just clarify how much time you actually spend on the farm? Because I feel like this narrative is building and people are expecting you to retire, to go farming, although I feel like that was properly ruled out in episode one. Go watch it or listen to it. Are you there right now, like when you leave here tonight?
No.
Okay.
So I live in my own house, but my obviously family run the farm, work on the farm, and it's just become like a thing. My dad and my brother especially always take the mick out of me, because he's like, you literally do nothing and it's painted as if you're this farmer / rugby player. But I love it. I love going back there. I love going and sitting and have a cup of tea with my gran, but I definitely don't actively take part in the farm.
Not only that,
they said I'd done more work in one day than Emily had ever done on the farm, so read into that what you will.
Yeah, not only that, she's also been promising a party on this farm that none of us have seen for years. The whole time I've known her, what's that, over 10 years? Still waiting.
Any moment now.
Yeah.
Any moment now, Emily. Just, you know, let us know.
Just planning.
This time,
it's going to be one hell of a party,
If there is a party and no actual manual labour and pushing of wheelbarrows involved, I might actually make my way to the farm as well.
I'm going to do a party on the farm first.
We'll probably get to the Tyndall farm before we get to the Scaz farm at this rate.
You have to travel all the way to Leicester either. So
you were saying that, Emily, that you were the fittest you'd been in a lot. You had like a proper pre-season coming into this. I'm sure Loughborough fans and players and everyone involved must have been... I mean, it's really bad for you to be injured, but it's a huge loss for your team as well.
Yeah, it was pretty sad. I think I said it on our pod that so normally you go away in the summer internationally, you do a summer tour, so then your pre-season is cut short. But this year we didn't go away, so we had a full, I don't know, 6-8 week pre-season, hit it really hard, and we were together in Bath as an England squad, so it was feeling pretty good. And then 3 minutes into the first game of the season, I snapped my leg, so it wasn't the best start. We've struggled a bit, to be honest, Loughborough. We've not had the best start to the season that we could have ever wished for. We've been hit with a few injuries, not just mine, a few more. So yeah, we're going to go hard after Christmas, or after the international break and after Christmas, so watch this space.
I did quite like it that Emily, so obviously she knew she was injured, and someone was like, Emily, get up, you gotta get back in the defensive line. I think I broke my leg, I won't be getting up. And they're like, okay, you stay there. Was it something like that, wasn't it?
And I literally walked in here tonight and I had hardly said hello and she whipped out the photo of the incredibly gruesome thing that happened to her foot and shoved it in my face. It is offensive looking. Do not ever look at Emily's phone. If she's holding it up, just close your eyes really tightly. I will never be able to unsee that. I can't believe that it happened. Let's talk about the start of your season, rather. Not a horror show. And Gloucester is kind of, you know, it's doing okay. It had a big win the other day.
No, it's been really good. Like, we should have been better. There were two games that... So we should have beaten Quinns. We should have beaten Bristol at home. And when I say should have, you know, like, classic, like, yeah, exactly, you just said it, classic, like, yeah, we really should have, but honestly, we had so many opportunities and just kind of handed them the win, which was really frustrating. In the last, I think Quinns was the last 3 minutes of the game, Harlequin and Bristol was the last 5 minutes of the game, so just massive lessons learnt for us. But yeah, we're super happy with the way we're playing. Like, some of our defensive work, some of the stuff we're stringing together is really promising. And especially as you mentioned, the Allianz Premier Cup last weekend, we're
one
just
for one.
Yeah,
one for one.
Yeah, we're
Thank
on
you.
The roll, boys. yeah, we're just looking to throw the ball around a lot more, like give the girls opportunity to play, which is super fun. Not for me because I was non-playing reserve this weekend, had to do the warm up, then fitness and run water, which was super fun. But hopefully, get a little bit of time this weekend, so we'll see.
They obviously realised they need to keep your feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Olympic girl, keep her feet on the
Absolutely.
Ground, keep her honest.
And she is literally going out on terrestrial television as an exceptional analyst commentator these days. You know, you just kind of have to rein her back a little bit.
Well, yeah, she's just getting too big for her boots, really, isn't she? Luckily, she's a quiet reserve type.
Sorry, are you talking about me or Scars? I'm not sure.
Well, we'd love to thank each and every one of you for coming out and spending the evening with us. It's been so great to see all of your faces. And it's been so amazing to hang out with you, Natasha, Mo. It's been phenomenal to have you as part of the show, and hopefully you'll become a little more of a regular fixture on in our crazy little party.
Am I getting phased out?
I'm not saying that we are going to delete anyone.
It
I'm
was
just saying.
Chillax comment that did it.
We're going to make this circle
so
a little
old.
Bigger.
Phasing
okay.
Out.
And thank you so much to Red Bull for hosting this series of events here and giving everyone the best seat in the house during this autumn international season. Thank you so much to Emily Scarrett for making the journey down in the moon boot all the way from outer space or the rural parts of the country. Mike Tyndall, it was good to see you as well. And we are the good, the Scars and the Rugby. Make sure that you subscribe, listen, comment and share our next episode with your friends. Cheers. Thank you.